Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
You heard it before, you hear it again. Welcome, everybody. Once again, I'm the lone wolf on this show. And it's quite naturally, you know what time it is. It's FSP. Showtime. 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I am JT, a.k.a. the Enemy Master. And I'm flying solo today because Victor's doing his obligation that he has every month. And he leaves me in his stead. So I'll be running this show all by my little self. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I always say it twice, because that's how nice I am. 347-637-3220, and you know what I'm going to say next, is the place to be if you want to talk to me. Got a great show in store for you today. Going to talk a little bit about the NFL. Super Bowl, for one. We're going to be talking about the state of the players, and I'm going to chronicle the things that have been going on with the players this past season, for one, and up until the present. I'm going to talk about a little bit about the if they're out of control. And some court cases that the players are going through. There's a lot of things that we're sitting here for an hour that we're going to try to cover. Now, if you listen to the FSP Crew Show on Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, well, I host that show, and my esteemed co-host, Jeff the Joker, is also on there. We had two callers call in. One, you probably heard him before. He's been on this show numerous times. He's been on the Master Plan, which is 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on which is 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time every Sunday. Macau happens to be Victor Gardner's cousin. And he often frequents the show, and he's very opinionated. He comes out, and he talked on Thursday. And then my esteemed co-host that joins me on Sunday and has joined me on Sunday throughout the football season, especially fantasy season, Lance, the NFL Exporter Goodman. All four of us talked on Thursday about the Super Bowl, different aspects of the Super Bowl. But for those that did not catch the show, I want to try to rehash it. Hopefully you call in. That's why I gave you that number. Hopefully you call in. Maybe you have a differing opinion or a different outlook on things, or a different view on things, I should say, that you can enlighten me. Maybe something I'm missing. I like to pride myself on the fact that I think I know a little about football. I've never played football only at the Pop Warner level. I never played it in high school, and that wasn't because I didn't want to. I'm not even going to go into it, but I didn't play it in high school. Not because I was afraid to. That's not the reason. It was a higher authority that wouldn't let me play football. And I didn't play it in any kind of college environment. So I guess I'm talking on a fan's perspective, okay, if you want to put it that way. I'm talking on a fan's perspective. I've watched a lot of football. I'm 60 years old. I'm not qualified because I'm 60 years old. but I've watched a lot of football, good and bad and in between. And I think I have a good idea of what is good, sound football and football decisions and what isn't. Now, I'm not an X and O's type of guy. I can break down a few things, but what I'm saying here is I'm not a expert. I don't get paid to make football decisions. I don't get paid to make any play calls. But I do believe what I see in front of me and what took place in the Super Bowl was one of the dumbest calls I've ever seen. And right after that Super Bowl, three guys that are in the Hall of Fame, three, not one, not two, not three. And these are big-time guys that recently been inducted into the Hall of Fame. And to a person, said that was one of the dumbest plays, if not the dumbest play called in the Super Bowl, much less a regular season game or a playoff game. In the biggest stage, in the biggest moment, dumbest call. Now, if you want me to name them, I can name them. Michael Irvin, Deion Sanders, Marshall Faulk. They were all on the NFL Network after the game, and to a man said that was the dumbest call. In one form or fashion, they said that was the dumbest call that they have ever seen in the Super Bowl, ever seen in the Super Bowl. And what can I say? I would have to agree with them. And I've said it. Let me break this down to you. I'm watching this Super Bowl on Sunday with a group of my friends. Okay, I go over to my friend's house. He's got, I do this every Sunday during the football season. We all get together, and he's got several TVs. We sit down, talk football, watch football, eat and drink, and you blah, yada, yada, yada. We be merry. We sit down there and watching the game. We're all enjoying the game, regardless of who. There was only one guy shooting, rooting for the Patriots. All the other guys in the room were rooting for, or I shouldn't say rooting for, but they were under the mindset, just like myself, that the better team that was going to win this game was the Seattle Seahawks. Let me preface this by saying, before I go any further, I'm not a fan of either team. I'm not a fan of either team. But being a former fan, and some people hold that against me, but it is what it is. It's not going to change. It's going to be like it is from now until I pass my dying bed or whatever circumstances make me change my mind. But it's not. I'm not changing my mind now. My mindset is set. I used to be a New York Jet fan. I'm no longer a New York Jet fan. Haven't been for about 3 years at least. Before that, it was like between 30 and 40 years I was a fan. And I don't want to get into why, but I'm not a fan of the Jets anymore, plain and simple. So I don't like the New England Patriots. And just because I'm not a Jet fan, now I'm presently a Texan fan for the last 3 years, going on the fourth year, doesn't mean I suddenly like or have no feelings for the New England Patriots. I just don't like the New England Patriots. I'm very skeptical of that organization, even though they won. And they've set records and done a lot of winning, especially Super Bowls, and been in a lot of Super Bowls. But I don't like the New England Patriots. But that's not the bias I have in watching this game. I'm thinking the better team with the better defense is going to win out. Okay? I was enjoying this game. All of us were enjoying this game. This is one of the better Super Bowls you could absolutely, without a doubt, sit down and watch and enjoy and enjoy the experience, because you were having two teams that were throwing punches and counter punches, and both defenses or offenses were responding and coming back with their own punch or counter punch per se. But it came down to this. And I really don't know how I'm going to get through this without getting all upset and hot and bothered like I've been ever since what I saw at the end of the game. So let me do this. Okay? Let's do this first. All right. In the first quarter, and I want to break this game down, because a lot of people have pointed out that, and I'm getting ahead of myself, but I want to set this up, that the Seattle Seahawks, let me put it this way, what I got upset at the end of the game, a lot of people say, well, why do you get upset what the Seattle Seahawks had did at the end of the game when they did the same thing earlier in the game? I'll say it like that for now. But this is how I'm going to break it down. In the first quarter, the first quarter ended, with the score 0-0, and the Patriots and put it this way, they ended the fourth quarter, Seattle Seahawks had the ball, first and 10, at the 25-yard line, okay? We'll say it like that. That's how the end of the first quarter happened. Going into the second quarter, quite naturally, Seattle still had the ball, and eventually had to punt the ball with about 13 minutes left in that quarter, okay? New England gets the ball with 13:57 in the second quarter. First and 10, Tom Brady throws a short pass to Danny Amendola at the Seattle 48 for 17 yards. First down. Next play, first and 10 at Seattle's 48. Brady throws an incomplete pass to Brandon LaFell. Second down. Brady throws a short pass to Brandon LaFell to Seattle 41 for 7 yards. Third down, Brady passes short right to Shane Vereen to Seattle's 36 for 5 yards. Another first down. First and 10 at the Seattle 36. The New England Patriots decide to take a shot down the field to Gronkowski, and it was incomplete pass. Second down, second and 10 at Seattle 36. Now, they're roughly in field goal range now. In the second and 10, Shane Vereen runs the ball up the middle for 1 yard to Seattle's 35. All right, 39 at the Seattle 35. If you don't make this first down, you always got a chance for Gronkowski to get in there to kick a field goal. Tom Brady passes and shotgun passes over the middle to Julian Edelman for 12 yards. Now the Patriots are first and 10, 23-yard line on the 12-yard line, because the pass was for 23 yards, to Seattle's 12-yard line. I'm sorry. First and 10 at Seattle's 12. And at this point, the Patriots definitely had the momentum, and the Seattle Seahawks vaunted defense is getting chopped up, and seems like they haven't solved the Patriots' offense quite yet. Even though they did stymie them, both teams stymied each other in the first quarter. First and 10 at Seattle's 12. Garrett Blunt runs up the middle for 1 yard. Now they're at Seattle's 11. Second and 9. All right. Tom Brady goes in shotgun again. Passes short left to Brandon LaFell for 11 yards. I told you they were at the 11-yard line. Touchdown. Okay. Seattle is now behind 7-0 because of that 9-play, 65-yard drive that took over four minutes, a little over 4 minutes, 4 minutes and 10 seconds. Seattle gets the ball back. It's a 9:47. They get the ball back. First and 10 at Seattle's 20. Russell Wilson sacked at the Seattle 17. So now it's second and 13. They run shotgun. Marshawn Lynch up the middle to Seattle 22 for 5 yards. Okay? Next is third and 8. Russell Wilson's in shotgun. Pass is incomplete. Deep right to Jermaine Kearse. Now, to me, and I've never understood this white teams, it's a different mindset, in my opinion. You're on your 22-yard line. You are at third and 8. Why take a deep shot? I understand that most teams are going to defend against the short pass, but versus a deep pass. But you're looking to make the first down. What's the more high percentage play? Would you rather throw short and try and get the first down, or take a deep shot with third and 8? Now, I could understand second and 8. Okay? But it's third and 8. If you don't make it, you got to punt the ball. What do? They take a shot at third and 8 at a deep pass to Jermaine Kearse. Now, you're going up against some very good corners, and you take a deep and when I get further on, I can understand why they took some shots, but you're trying to get some momentum here. You've been stymied in the first quarter. This is the first time you get the ball after the early part of the second quarter. This is the first time you get it back. And this is maybe close to halfway through that second quarter. And you take the deep shot. I wouldn't have done that, but I don't get paid to make those decisions. I understand that. Of course, they didn't make it. They have to punt the ball. And they punted the ball. Edelman gets the ball at New England's 28 and runs for about 11 yards. Runs for 11 yards to the New England's 28. New England starts at their 28-yard line. This is the second possession that New England gets the ball. Brady starts in shotgun. Now, this is a recurring theme here. Brady starting in shotgun. Pass is incomplete, short left to Ron Gronkowski. He goes in shotgun again in second and 10 at the New England 28. Pass is short right to Julian Edelman for 7 yards. Now it's third and 3. It felt so nice the first time. They wanted to do it twice to Edelman, but it didn't work. Pass is incomplete. Now New England has to punt the ball. Seattle gets the ball back with a little more than 7 minutes left in the second quarter. At the Seattle 30. They run Marshawn Lynch up the middle for 5 yards. Now they're at the Seattle 35. They rush second and 5. They rush Marshawn Lynch up the middle to Seattle 39. Now they're 4 yards. Now they're at the Seattle 39, which is 31. After a false start penalty, now they're back on Seattle. Now they're back on the 34-yard line with 36. Russell Wilson goes in shotgun. Now, this is what I was saying earlier, that I would have done a series earlier, and they did it this time. Russell Wilson goes in shotgun, throws a short pass to Jermaine Kearse to Seattle 40 for 6 yards. First down, Seattle. Now they're on the 40-yard line of Seattle. They run Marshawn Lynch up off left tackle to Seattle 45 for 5 yards. Second and 5. Then they decide, and this is what I was saying earlier, I would rather do it on second down than do it on third down. They got a little bit smarter, so they decided to do it second and 5 at Seattle's 45. Russell Wilson in shotgun again. Matthews, excuse me, to New England's 11-yard line, and that's a 44-yard pass play completion. That's when I would make a concerted effort to take the deep shot, not on third down, because if you miss it, which is a lower percentage play in a deep pass, now you got to kick the ball. They learned a little bit from the last series, and they decided to do what I was suggesting. Now, I'm not saying I know everything, but I'm saying this only makes sense if you want to play smart football. They go to no huddle at 1st and 10 at New England's 11, and run Marshawn Lynch up the middle to New England 6. Now, this is a recurring theme. You see that Marshawn Lynch is getting at least 5 yards, or close to 5 yards, every time he's running the ball. Just keep that in the back of your mind. Now they're at the New England 6. He ran 5 yards. He's now at the New England 6. Okay? 2nd and 5 at the New England 6. Marshawn Lynch, left tackle to New England's 3-yard line for 3 yards. Now you're at 2nd and 3. Excuse me. Now after he gets to the 3-yard line, you're at 3rd and 2. At New England's 3-yard line. So you can get the first down without even getting into the end zone. So what do? They ran Marshawn Lynch on the first down. They ran Marshawn Lynch on the second down. Ran Marshawn Lynch on the third down. And what happened? Marshawn Lynch, right tackle for 3 yards. Touchdown! Listen to what I'm saying here. Listen to how they ran that. First, second, third down, they ran Marshawn Lynch from the 11-yard line into the end zone. So he got 11 yards in 3 plays. And it resulted in a touchdown. 8 plays, 70 yards, almost 5 minutes off the clock. New England gets the ball with 2 minutes and 16 seconds in the game. I mean, in his first half, before Katy Perry does her thing. Okay? They kick off, touchback, New England starts the ball 1st and 10 at their 20. First pass to Damian Ndola for 11 yards to New England's 31. Okay, timeout, 2-minute warning, okay? After the 2-minute warning, 1st and 10 at New England's 31. LeGarrette Blount runs for 9 yards, and now we're at the New England 40. Now it's a minute 33 left in the first half. 2nd and 1 at New England's 40. No huddle shotgun. Tom Brady passes short left to Shane Vereen to New England's 45 for 5 yards. Now it's a minute left. 1st and 10 at New England's 45. No huddle shotgun. Tom Brady passes incomplete deep left to Danny Amendola. 2nd and 10 at New England's 45. Julian Edelman, left end, ran 7 yards to get to Seattle's 48-yard line. Third and 3 because of a penalty on Cliff Averill. I'm sorry. A penalty on the Seahawks created a 3rd and 3 for the Patriots because a neutral zone infraction, which cost Seattle 5 yards, which helped the New England Patriots. 1st and 10. Okay, that resulted in a first down. I'm sorry about that. 1st and 10 at Seattle's 43. Again, this is a recurring theme. Tom Brady in the shotgun passes short over the middle to Shane Vereen for 16 yards, and now they're at Seattle's 27-yard line. All right, timeout number 1. 40 seconds left on the clock. 40 seconds left on the clock in the first half. Every time New England getting the ball now, since the first quarter, they've been able to do what they want. 1st and 10 at Seattle's 27-yard line, shotgun again. Tom Brady passes over the middle to It's now passed it to Sean Vereen, or Shane Vereen, and he gets to the 22-yard line with a 5-yard gain. Okay, now it's 2nd and 5. 2nd and 5. Understand that. 2nd and 5. Where am I at here? Oh, well, I'm sorry. I lost my space here. Oh, Twenty-seven-yard line. Where am I at? Oh, here it is. 16 yards. Oh. 27. Just see how 27. 16 yards. Timeout number one. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. I lost my spot here. Now they're at 1st and 10 at Seattle's 27. Tom Brady, shotgun again. Passes to Shane Vereen. I already said this. At Seattle's 22 for 5 yards. 2nd and 5 at Seattle's 22. All right, shotgun again. 36 seconds left in the first half. Tom Brady passes deep right to Ron Gronkowski for 22 yards. Touchdown. Touchdown, touchdown. 8 plays, 80 yards, 1:45 off the clock, and there's only 31 seconds left in the first half. 31 seconds. Now New England's up 14-7. Keeping track. Seattle gets the ball on a touchback, gets the ball at the Seattle 20, having to go 80 yards for a touchdown in 31 seconds. First down and 20, 31 seconds. Robert Turbin up the middle to Seattle's 39 for 19 yards. Timeout, excuse me, number one to Seattle. 24 seconds left, and they're only at the 39-yard line of Seattle. They're still on their side of the field. Haven't even penetrated Patriots territory yet. 1st and 10, 24 seconds, shotgun. Everybody's in shotgun in this game. Russell Wilson runs left end, runs around the left end, out of bounds at New England's 44 with a 17-yard gain. Okay? Now it's 1st and 10, 17 seconds left in there. Russell Wilson passes the ball, incomplete. Now it's 11 seconds left in the game. And they're on the New England's 44-yard line. 2nd and 10 at New England's 44-yard line. Russell Wilson again, like I said, everybody's in shotgun. Passes deep left to Ricardo Lockett. He's out of bounds at New England's 21 with a 23-yard pass completion. Also, there's a penalty on the New England Kyle Arrington face mask, which adds an additional 10 yards onto that. Timeout, Seattle. 6 seconds left in the game. That penalty put Seattle with 6 seconds left in the game. And then this is crucial because a lot of people are saying, have said this about what took place in the first half near the end of the game and what took place in the second half at the end of the game. So this is crucial to one of my arguments about it's a different circumstance of what took place. And this is what I'm talking about. 1st and 10 at the New England 11 with 6 seconds left. You have one play that you can run. If it doesn't work, you have a timeout left, and you can kick a field goal as long as you don't run the clock out. Different circumstances than what took place at the end of the game. You're on the 11, you have 6 seconds left, and you have a one single timeout. Different circumstances because you're in a different part of the field. You're on the 11-yard line versus the half or 1-yard line with a lot more time at the end of the game versus 6 seconds and near the first half of this game. 6 seconds left in the game. 6 seconds left in the half, I'm sorry. Shotgun, Russell Wilson passes short left to Chris Matthews for 11 yards. Touchdown. Now, at the end of the half, Seattle and New England are tied. Tied at the end of the half. Different circumstances, what took place at the end of the, near the end of the game versus the end of the first half. Seattle was at the 11-yard line with 6 seconds left, and that makes a big difference. You can't run the ball when you have 6 seconds left from the 11-yard line. It makes no sense. You had to pass the ball. If it didn't work, then you at least had a timeout. If you didn't make it to the end zone, you at least had a timeout and you could kick a field goal. Just different circumstances, different play calling because of where you had yourself play on the field. So that makes a big difference, huge difference. I got a call in here. Let me bring him in here and see what he has to say. Well, before I do that, let me take a quick break, gather my thoughts, try to calm myself down a little bit, and then we'll bring the caller in, and then we'll go from there. How's that?
Looking for fantasy sports advice? How about informative conversation? Look no further, as The Master Plan features two men that can help in both areas. Jerry the Master Taylor and Lance the NFL Exporter Goodman provide you with a fantasy fix live every Sunday morning on The Master Plan at blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. That's The Master Plan, Sundays 10 a.m. Eastern on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK and streaming at spotonradio.webs.com. Information, motivation, variety, The Master Plan. Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
All right. I'm back. I'm a little calmed down now. Took a brief, deep breath. Now we're going into the second half of this show, and let me bring in my one caller I have sitting here, Macau. What's up, my man? How you been?
What's up, man? I was thinking that you would be talking about Chris Paul by now. You still talking about the Super Bowl stuff, man?
Yes, I am. I've been talking about yes, I have been talking about this. Yes. I can't get over it, man. It's tough to me. And I promise you, we will talk about Chris Paul after the after I finish this off with the Super Bowl. Anyway, before we get to Chris Paul, all right. As you people know, after the second half, the game is tied 14-14, and Seattle gets the ball and basically is get the ball in the second half. They elected to defer to the first half for the Patriots, so they get the ball in the second half. And drive the ball down, and instead of getting a field goal, instead of getting a touchdown, they get a field goal. Eventually, at the end of the third quarter, and I'm rushing through this now, at the end of the third quarter, Seattle eventually got up to be 24-14 with the defense that they had and the body language, thinking they had this game wrapped up because they're up by 2 points and no team had come back from a deficit of over 10 points or more in the Super Bowl ever. And they figured because of the defense that they were able to put out on the field, that they would be able to stave off the New England Patriots. Well, we all know what happened. New England, in the fourth quarter, the first drive, one of the first drives that they had, ended up with a Danny Amendola 4-yard touchdown pass. We put that New England down only by 3. And then on the subsequent, with about a little less than 7 minutes left in the game, he passed to Danny Amendola, who had a very good move to get open for a 3-yard touchdown pass that put him ahead, which eventually came down to that infamous play with about 26 seconds left in the game. Rather than run the ball, when at first and 5 at New England 5, Marshawn Lynch ran left tackle for 4 yards to New England's 1-yard line. Now, earlier in the game, let me just emphasize, earlier in the game, especially in the second half, if I'm not mistaken, they ran Marshawn Lynch first down at New England's 10. This is in the second quarter. First down when Seattle was down 7-0. First and 10 at New England's 11. They ran Marshawn Lynch up the middle for 5 yards. They came back second and 5 at the New England 6. They ran Marshawn Lynch again for 3 yards. Now they're at the New England 3-yard line. Third down and 2. And third down and two to get a first down, and third down and 3 for a touchdown. Did they pass? No. They ran Marshawn Lynch, right tackle for 3 yards, touchdown. So what happens in the fourth quarter when you are at the 5-yard line after the spectacular play that took place prior to that when you threw a pass to Jermaine Kearse, who had an acrobatic catch, I must admit, for 33 yards, put him at New England's 5-yard line. To me, it's a repeat process. You give Marshawn Lynch the ball at the 5-yard line. He runs for 4 yards. To me, it's a no-brainer. Second and 1, you give Marshawn Lynch the ball again, and you, more than likely, since he was running through New England at will, he results in a touchdown, and we have a different version of who wins the Super Bowl versus what happened when they decided to pass. Just like Seattle, it's going to be tough to get over this loss. Me, because you ruined my Super Bowl, Pete Carroll. Darrell Bevell, you ruined my Super Bowl. I understand the rookie made a hell of a play, but that rookie wouldn't have been in that situation if you made the right call. And I know it's hindsight, it's 2020, but for all intents and purposes, you did the same thing in the first half, at the end, in the second quarter. Why not repeat the process? Because it was working for you throughout the game, that whenever Marshawn Lynch got the ball, 9 times out of 10, he was getting positive yardage. It makes no sense. I understand it's over. Get over it. I understand that. But it ruined my Super Bowl. If you could see the way I acted when I saw that call, the guys I was sitting with thought I was another person, because I have to admit, I absolutely love football. I'm a fan of football and a fan of one particular team, but I absolutely love football, and I'm very passionate about it when I watch it, and I'm really passionate about it when I see good football, and when I see something absolutely stupid that somebody does. That they get millions of dollars to make the right decisions at the right time, in the right moment to put the team in the best position, and they make some of the dumbest calls, and they get paid millions of dollars for it. It boggles my mind, and I have a hard time coping with it. And this is one of those moments. I absolutely went exorcist. To this, it's almost been a week, and I still have a hard time getting over it because I can't believe what happened and why a coach would make a dumb decision like that when it's obvious what the right decision would be. I don't know what the outcome if he had given to Marshawn or Lynch, but with a high probability versus the low percentage pass that you'd called, that it would have got done. Anyway, I understand it. It's over and done with. I'm going to try not to talk about it. Let me put it that way. I'm not saying I'm going to stop talking about it, because this is something that is hard to get over for the Seattle Seahawks, and quite naturally, you see, it's hard for me to get over. But it is what it is. Got to live with it and deal with it. And I want to talk about, because McCall did bring this point up, and I had no intention of bringing it up, but I think he can lay a little bit more knowledge on it than I can. I only got bits and pieces of it. And what took place, maybe he could break it down a lot better than I can. So I'm going to take a step back. I want you, McCall, to give me the circumstance and what took place and what transpired since this incident, and then we can go from there. Talk to me.
Well, I mean, basically, Chris Paul took issue with a technical foul that was called on him by one of the rookie referees, which happens to be a woman. And his criticism was very harsh, you know. I mean, because what she called him a tech foot is not, you know, getting the ball out fast, which is what that up-tempo team does on a regular basis. And he went to take it out quick, and she said, uh-uh, and he said, what, why, uh-uh, and then she just tacked him. So he was upset about that, and he leveled a very strong criticism of her by stating that, you know, I don't care what anyone says, that's a bad call, you know, and by it being a bad call, you know, maybe this isn't for her, right? So the Twitterverse blew up because of this statement. And it just got out of control, you know. It really just got really, really bad. You really have to take and listen to his statement yourself and kind of make your own opinion. I'm of the opinion that he just laid some, you know, just a really harsh criticism of a bad call. But mm-hmm. they are saying that he, you know, was being sexist, and the NBA referee union came out behind her and said that, you know, this was, you know, unprofessional of him and all this and this and that. So it's a big mess, a big back and forth or whatever. But like I said, I'm not of the opinion that he was being sexist. I think he was just being very harshly critical of the call. And, you know, and he was really levying it on a rookie referee. And
right.
Now, you know, everybody's going hiding up under their skirts, you know. So it's like, you know, you want to get in the big time with the big boys. You want to run with the big boys, but you don't want to be criticized like big boys. We gotta criticize you on a different playing field. Say what? But, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. You gotta really check out those comments he made for yourself.
I'm looking at the comments, and I'll read them for those who don't know it. This is a quote from Chris Paul, his reaction after the game. The tech that I got right there was ridiculous. I don't care what nobody says. I don't care what she says. That's terrible. There's no way that could be a tech. That's ridiculous. If that's the case, this might not be for her. And in my opinion, this is what I'm saying here. Chris Paul's been married for 30-plus years. He has a daughter. And I saw part of his management team, a majority or a lot of his management team, are females. So it's not like he doesn't surround himself or is not sensitive enough or whatever. That he doesn't treat women with respect. I have to go along with the same lines as you, McCall. I'm thinking he was just calling out this rookie referee, regardless of gender. And you could easily say in this last sentence, if that's the case, this might not be for him versus her. I think he was just calling out the rookie ref for making a dumbass technical call, in his opinion, that a, and I would say a seasoned referee would not have done. I think that's what you're trying to tell me. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, while she was within the rules to call the tech, right, she very much was within the rules to call the tech, but it's trivial. You know, it's very, very much trivial, very ticky-tack, and it just, you know, it just smacks of, you know, just being a rookie. That's what I saw. That's what I thought about it. I mean, come on. All the up-tempo teams, you know, do the quick out. You know what I mean? They have 1 foot in on the out, you know, on the, you know, behind the line, and they take the ball and just throw it. You know what I mean? They all do it. They all do it because that's what they want. They want that quick tempo. But, you know, I'm just really getting tired of this PC nation now, man. I'm really getting real sick of it because they are just out of control. You know, no one can be criticized now. Everybody's in their feelings. Nobody can take a criticism. Everybody is going after a whole gender or a whole race or a whole color or a whole creed now when they level your criticism. It's just ridiculous, man. It's absolutely ridiculous. The media keeps driving this nonsense too.
Yep. So I understand what you're saying. So if you criticize a referee, regardless of gender, or you criticize someone, the media is coming up with an ulterior motive versus an actual criticism, just like a ref. And I have to definitely believe, since this was a rookie ref, quite naturally the pros are going to be a little bit more harder on him than they are with a seasoned ref, because it's a rookie ref.
Exactly.
You really don't know the do's and don'ts of rookie ref, because they're rookies versus a seasoned ref, and those veteran players know what they can say and know what they can't say against an experienced ref versus a rookie ref. And it's obvious this ref has a quick whistle, let me put it that way, especially against a player. Maybe not against the call, but against the player for saying anything that she deems a technical. Now, I'm gonna flip the script on you, man, and give me. And I think you know where I may be coming from. Now, this rookie ref, an NBA player, says something to her, and it's something trivial from what you tell me, and she took it the wrong sensitive way. Now, did she take it because, I mean, did she call it technical because that she has to show that she's not going to take any gruff, or she's sensitive because this is a guy, this is a woman, and she's thinking he's trying to bully her, and she's going to get the best of him? What's your thoughts on that?
I really don't get that sense, but I kind of get more the sense that she really didn't know what she was doing. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I really get that. And I don't think she liked being challenged by it. I don't think it had anything to do with the genders. You know what I mean? I just don't think she liked the challenge of it, you know, by him or what have you.
Okay.
I don't think she liked the challenge that he gave her of it, and I think that's why she was quick to throw it. And if you watch the video, he wasn't aggressive in his nature at all. He was just asking, you know, why You know, I mean, everything was so fast that I can't put that on, you know, there was a bullying thing going on. However, if it had been that, I don't think that probably would have been the route to take. You know what I mean? That she could have just really threw him out for real. If it was like that, but I didn't get that sense. I really didn't get that sense.
Okay. I just had to throw that out there, for the simple fact is that if it was as simple as, what do you mean, she may have felt that he was trying to intimidate her and decided to throw a technical to get back at him. I'm just saying that because the simple fact is that if it was so trivial as that, there is definitely no need for a technical. Watch what you say.
Exactly. That's what a seasoned referee would have done. A seasoned referee would have been like, look, don't say nothing else. You know what I mean? If you say something else, I'm going to give you a tech. You know what I mean? Or you know, like Bavetta used to do, he would just run up the court. He just looked out, he would just run up the court. You know, and just be done with it.
Yep. You know, I don't know, and I'm not picking on her. This is because this seems to be, and it's in all sports, more so in basketball and in baseball, that the officials seem like they are ready to, for one reason or another, get into a player's face when he disputes what they have to say, when they question some type of decision that they made. And they question it, and rather than and it's not all officials, but some of these officials decide to, you know what, I'm going to stand up to this player. Who do you think he is? And either in basketball, give it technical or something to that effect, or stand up in his face and say something just as abrasive back. And I've seen that happen. Same thing with referees. I mean, umpires in baseball get up in a player's face after he disputes a call. I'm not saying it's all referees or all umpires, but I've seen it happen with certain referees and umpires in baseball and basketball. Not so much in football, because they get penalized real quick when they start to get in the face of a referee. Heaven forbid or God forbid that she's one of these type of referees that going to have a quick whistle when a player questions one of her calls. Because you get a reputation like that, I understand players can walk away, but that can also be a negative with the referees, especially in basketball. What's your thoughts on that?
Say that again.
Okay. confrontation, referees getting into a confrontation, being confrontational, referees or umpires being confrontational, not all of them, but there's a select few out there that are very confrontational toward the players and in baseball and in basketball.
I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. I don't understand why some of these referees can insert themselves into the game and insert themselves into a story. The best referee is a referee that is not, you know, is seen but not heard. You know what I mean? You don't have to. I thought one of the most well officiated games was the Super Bowl. I don't even remember what the referees looked like. You know
yes,
what I mean? They did their thing. You know what I'm saying? There was a few penalties here and there. You know, it was a scuffle that broke out or whatever. But still, you know what I mean? It was all about the players and it was all about the gameplay and all like that. But that's what I believe about good officiate. If they insert themselves into the game and stuff like that, it's a problem. It's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think? And I really don't know how to phrase this, but what do you think about this referee going forward? Do you think she's going to have more problems with players, or this is going to hurt her career of what happened? If this happened against one of the superstars of the game, and he's now seen in somewhat of a bad light because it was against a female referee.
I really don't know how it's going to play out. This is all new stuff for me. This PC crap, it's all new for me. I mean, I don't see it, you know, looking good for Chris Paul in this situation. Mm-hmm. And as far as she is concerned, it's a mess in my opinion. I mean, if they were trying to protect her integrity, they have not done that. They have not done that because I could tell you silently between a lot of men or whatever, we looking at that joint sideways like, huh? Really? Oh, okay. So now everybody got to play a different rules now. But you know what I'm saying? It's not like It's not like we saying it, but we thinking it. Oh, okay. So now that's off limits. So she can just call what she want now. You know what I'm saying? And now we just looking at, man, I don't even want to watch this game, or this game gonna be slighted because she in the game. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen, man. I mean, I really don't know how that's gonna play. How it's gonna totally play out, though. I really don't. I'm anxious to see, though.
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of YouTube clips, and I'll probably watch it after we get off the air. But one of them in the comments said that in that Clippers game, the Clippers were called for five technical fouls. Did you know that?
Nah. Nah, I didn't know that.
Five technical fouls were called in that game. The Clippers were called for five technical fouls. So I gotta watch a few of these clips on YouTube to see what took place, because Michael Smith and Skip Bayless and Stephen A. have some YouTube clips about this, and I want to find out a little bit more about this, because this is very interesting to me that, even though she supposedly the victim because of what Chris Paul supposedly has said, now she describes that as the victim, she could pay a penalty for this because the fact is that she's a rookie ref. So there's nothing saying that come next year, the NBA season, that she may be around or not because she's a rookie ref. I don't know the probation period or whatever they have so they can stay in the league, but this can be even though she's the victim or being the so-called victim in this, it could be a black mark on her record early in her career, in her rookie season. So, and it won't be the first or the last time something like this with a referee, even though they're perceived as the victim, they'll be viewed as the villain. This very well could be that case. We'll have to wait and see how this plays out, not just this season, but for next season, if she's still around. All right. We come to the end. Macau, I know you came in on the half side of the second half side of the show, but I appreciate you calling. We got about 30 seconds left in this show before we get the heck on out of here. Give me your thoughts going into the rest of this weekend, and we'll end it from there.
Oh, I mean, I don't really have that much. I just wanted to chop it up with you about that whole Chris Paul thing. I'm over the Super Bowl thing. I'm over that. I'm over that. But clearly, you haven't got over it. Maybe next week you get over it. But, yeah, man, just have a good weekend. Peace and blessings and all that good stuff.
And what I have to close is with this. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the rest of the week. Tune in 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Thursday, where I'm going to be the host of that show, which is the FSP Cruise Show, along with Jeff the Joker, and maybe Black Mike Wright will jump in there, and maybe even Macau. You maybe even hear Macau come jump back in there, and we're talking about the news and notes of the past week. We still have to talk about Adrian Peterson, still have to talk about all these felons that cropping up ever since Christmas. So maybe we'll jump into that Thursday, because who knows who's the next player in the NFL is going to get arrested. It's crazy. With that being said, a replay of the master plan will be in effect on Sunday. I won't be available on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So be aware of that. You're more than welcome to listen to a replay, but call in. You will not get me. Thanks for joining me today. Tune in next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where FSP, Vic Gardner, will be back. I'll be co-hosting. That being said, we're out of here. Later.
Fantasy sports and politics.
Get ready to rumble.
You want to talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics.